God, who is he really? Really, who is God? And more importantly, let me ask you this question. Who is God to you? Who is God in your mind? Well, when I left Bible college, I started serving in a church in Memphis, Tennessee, or be particular, Germantown, Tennessee. And at that church, we had a preschool. And the preschoolers went to chapel three times a week, and they went into the room that we called a sanctuary, okay? Which is, this room used to be called probably that, and now we call it our auditorium, right? We've sort of steered away from sanctuaries, and they were taught at that point that that was God's house. And God's house was a special place, and you had to be very, very quiet in God's house, right? And there was no walking. Running, I mean, in God's house, only walking. And you had to be very orderly in everything and come down to the front and sit right there in God's house. And so that's what the kids were taught. And so one time I was in transition across the lobby, and the preschoolers were in transition, and one little boy was looking through the narrow glass of the door to the sanctuary, and he said, "Look, look, I see God in there." Because actually, who lives in God's house but God, right? That would make totally perfect sense. Well, it happened to be our lead pastor, and he was he was walking around on the platform making some changes in where things would be for Wednesday night service. And so we got a lot of laughs out of that statement that that little boy made, because all his friends then stuck their head, tried to get out of the way, they started a little fight because they all wanted to see God in God's house. And so when things would get sort of dull in the office or something, I'd call Dean and I'd say, "Hey, how's God doing today?" or something like that, you know, just to get a laugh out of him, sort of in sarcasm. Dean was the lead pastor, you know. And so it was interesting, but what the concept of God is, where God is, what God is, really affects who we are, how we view life. And so as we start this year, where is God? Who is he really? And who is he really to you? Does he live in a sanctuary? Who is he really to you? There was a young man who was walking home from his time at work at a tire company, and he heard a street preacher. How many of you have heard a street preacher? Well, he heard a street, he heard the street preacher, and the street preacher said, if you don't know how to be saved, just call on God. Well, somehow the Holy Spirit took that statement and penetrated it into the heart of this young man. And he prayed, "God, help me to know you." And that began one of the greatest journeys of discovering of who God really was that we have known in Christian faith. This young man had no formal theological training, but he started to learn from the Bible who God really was, and his pursuit of God transformed him totally. His name was A.W. Tozer. You may have heard of him. He went on to pastor for 30 years the Southside Alliance Church in Chicago. He wrote 40 books. Among them are The Pursuit of God and The Knowledge of the Holy, now regarded as incredible Christian classics. His intelligence and his leadership were tremendous, and they brought him tremendous notoriety and fame. And yet he and his wife Ada lived a simple life. They never owned a car. They took trains and buses. They wanted to talk to people. They wanted to see life. They wanted to engage and be those street preachers who could share Jesus. To the very end of life, Tozer signed away most of the royalties to his books to people who were in greater need than himself. In some of Tozer's books, he asked the challenging question that challenges our hearts today, who is God? And this is one of Tozer's quotes. What comes into your mind when you think about God is the most important thing about you. Let me read it again. What comes into your mind when you think about God is the most important thing about you. Man's spiritual history will positively demonstrate that no religion has ever been greater than its idea of God. Chuck Colson added to Tozer's statement by saying, there is no culture who has been great, who has not been defined by its idea of God. A society will be pure or dishonorable based on its view of who God is. If God is held in a high status at a high level, society will have high standards, high levels of ideas. If a society has a low view of God, they will choose to be pragmatic and self-serving and think of God as serving them rather than them serving Him. So, what do you think about God? What do you think about God starting 2020? If you think back about how I viewed God as a kid, it's very interesting, and you might think about how you viewed God as a kid. Some may view God as sort of a lenient grandparent. Any of you grandparents, lenient grandparents, you know? You give them cookies when mom says no. You buy them the gift when mom said no. Dad said don't get them that. And you go, I'll get it to them on the sly. You know, I get it. Those lenient grandparents, you know. You can stay up past your bedtime. You're going home tomorrow morning. You know, you can stay up past your bedtime. I don't care. Let's watch movies. It's all about relationship. It's not about the structure, right? Are you that lenient grandfather, you know? Is that how you view God? That he's this lenient grandfather that says, oh, you're just so cute, you can do anything you want. You're just so cute, you got no expectations of you. You just be you and let me just watch you. You know, is that our primary view of God? It will change how we respond, right, in life, if that's our primary view of God. A primary idea of God also is quite opposite of that, that God's this angry judge God. That he's the God with the big fly swat and you're the fly. And he's just waiting for you to land in the wrong place. And he's going to smack you. And you're going to be done, right? Lightning out of heaven, you know? Coming down. Is that our view of God? That he is that person? That can create great anxiety and fear in our heart if that is our view of who God is. God's always looking to get you. His eyes are always on you, not to watch out for you, but to grab you and get you. If you think God is a distant deity who sits up in a lofty place, far, far, far away, and is not engaged in your personal life or in the life of this world, that will change how you view God. You'll sort of, you know, disregard him. Maybe you view God as a 911 God, and that you're fine not to have anything to do with him until you're in crisis, and then you call 1-800-GOD-HELP and find it's busy, right? No. But you dial 9-100-GOD-HELP, and you're like going, hey, God, come help me because I've got a crisis going on. I know we haven't talked for how long, but I'm going to go to church, and I'm going to da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, and make all these promises. Just before we drop off the top of the roller coaster, right? There, go down. All these ideas of God, they affect how we live our lives, how we attend church, how we parent, how we value other people, how we treat other people. It affects our sex life. It affects the way we use our time. It affects the way we spend our money. It affects everything about us, our view and idea of who God is. It affects how we treat people, consciously or unconsciously, if we have this view, this high view of God and this high view of life. It changes how we treat people, how we think about things. What comes in your mind when you think about God? If Tozer is right, then it is the most important thing about you, what you think about God. The book, The Good and Beautiful God, by James Smith, suggests that our particular idea about God was formed early in our family, in our early life. It was shaped mostly and primarily by your family. Your family is important in the view of God that you have. Parents, you are the major former of the view of God in your children's life. God has given you that. It's a privilege, an opportunity. It's also a challenge, isn't it? What your children will think about God is what will you teach. Our culture is the second thing. What peers and those around teach about God and the idea of God is the second greatest influencer on a child's life of what they think about God. It's religious circles that are third in the idea of what cultivates in a kid's life of what they think about God. Once these ideas of God are in place, they rarely change totally. They tend to be challenged sometimes, and unless there is a real conversion at a point in a person's life that they change their whole idea of God, they remain intact. And Smith says that our idea of God will tend to run us or ruin us. So, you can see that it's tremendously important what our view of God is and who God really is. Today I want us to consider what the theologians say is that the sufficiency of God as we begin to examine throughout this series who God is. The idea that God is enough. The idea that God is big enough. The idea that God is sufficient enough. Sometimes we have a very limited view of God and God's existence. My initial thoughts of God were formed during my elementary school years and maybe even in my preschool years because I thought, pleasing God by going to church on Sunday dressed up in your Sunday best, right? Which were usually quite uncomfortable kind of clothes that you had to wear. And you went to this place where it was formal and you had to act with great structure. You couldn't be yourself. You had to be what your parents expected. And if you didn't sit on those hard pews and do the right thing, you got thumped on the back of the head, right? Okay, you didn't grow up that way. God bless your parents. Mine did. Might pinch you just a little bit. Going to church meant going to Sunday school. Sunday school. And it was in a dark, dank, smelly basement. All right? Where there were little classrooms all carved out. And they made little tables and little chairs that you could get splinters from. There were little pews left over from the old church, and they brought them into the Sunday because we didn't have to buy more chairs. And there were those metal chairs that were so cold if you wore short pants. They were so cold if you wore short pants. We went to church 3 times a week. That was Sunday morning for about an hour. We did Sunday school before that. That was one. We did Sunday night. That could go on 2.5 hours. According on how things went. We did Saturday night for about 2.5 hours. And we did Wednesday night all the time. And one time I remember when my dad wasn't on staff at a church, we were mowing the yard on Saturday night, and it got to be church time, and we decided not to go. I was for sure the big fly swat of God would smack us big time. If something would happen between now and Sunday morning, would we really make it to heaven or not? It was a concern that I actually had. We came to formal church where it might be uncomfortable and we had to dress up and not be like we really are and sit there and be good because that was the expectation of God. We came to God's house and we sang songs that were composed in the 1800s. They were not relevant in musical style to the current day. And they were accompanied by a band that never practiced. And it was obvious They played their own thing from time to time, and it didn't match what everybody else was. Sometimes it was not in harmony. But I have had a musical ear most of my life, and it stressed me at times why that didn't match. I've later learned why it didn't match, and that's an incredible thing. Even though I went through all those things, God somehow, through His grace, gave me a great view of what God was and who God is. The idea was planted in my heart. But sometimes we can get the idea that doing what God wants, fulfilling God's expectations, is really what we're supposed to be doing. He needs us to dress up and to show up, and if God is really going to be God, He needs us to give money, and He needs us to volunteer, and He needs us to give to His organization so that the church can go on. And can all these things tell us who God really is? They don't. Even after I grew up, I was left with a spiritual life to discover who God really was. If you aren't careful, you can think that God is insufficient without your help, and that He in somehow needs us to be God. But the reality is that God is quite sufficient without us. He was God before we were, and He will be God after we are. Sometimes we think more highly of ourselves than we ought. The Apostle Paul met a similar mindset in the church at Athens in Acts 17. They had gods to everything because they wanted to appease the gods, not to make the gods mad at them. So they worshiped a plurality of gods. And even to cover the gods that they didn't worship, they had a god position in their in Athens where they had a marker for the unknown god, just in case they missed anybody. They wanted to do everything to worship all the gods so that they didn't displease any of them. Sometimes that's our view of God, just like the Athenians. If I do everything and I make it all just right, then I will have the pleasing presence of God in my life. Paul writes to the Athenians, "The God who made the world and everything in it is the Lord of heaven and earth, and does not live in temples built by hands. And He is not served by human hands, as if He needed anything, because He Himself gives all men life and breath and everything else. God did this so that men would seek Him and perhaps reach out for Him and find Him, though He is not far from each one of us. For in Him we live and move and have our being." The message of the Bible is that God doesn't really need our service. He doesn't really need our temples, our churches. He doesn't really need our religious ceremonies, or He doesn't really need our worship songs or our preaching messages. God doesn't really need that to be God, because God is sufficient all by Himself without anything I could do for Him. He does not need our nations. He does not need our dress codes. He does not need our places of meeting. He does not even need us to understand Him. He does not even need us to believe in Him. He is still God whether we choose to follow Him or not. He is still God. Your decision to follow Him and your discipline to follow what God asked us to do doesn't change Him. He wants you, but He doesn't need you. God wants you so much that He sent Jesus Christ to die on a cross for you, but God is independent and He is sufficient without us. This is who God is. The psalmist said, before the mountains were born, or you brought forth the earth and the world from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. Before we were, he was fully God. Back when God created the earth, the stars, the moon, all of us, he did a mighty fine job. And he even looked at it and said, hey, this is really good. And when perfection says it's really good, it's pretty good. You know what I mean? He could have changed anything he wanted, but he did chose not to. He created a universe so vast, the thought of ever exploring all of it seems unfathomable. Where does it end? The end of the universe seems impossible to even think about. Scientists tell us that the universe is still expanding in some areas, and they tell us that the universe is dying in certain areas. We have to take their word for it, right? We can see through powerful telescopes that there are 10 billion galaxies. Get it, 10 billion galaxies is what we can see. That's what we can observe. Not closely, but we can observe it. And we can observe 1 billion trillion observable stars. Can you imagine how many zeros there are in that number? I can't even begin to think about what that would look like, you know? And they know there are many, many more. Now, if we dial back to just our galaxy, and our galaxy has been named for a wonderful candy bar, right? Called the Milky Way. And scientists tell us that there are 300 billion stars in our galaxy. And I bet there are 301 billion, don't you? Just because those exact numbers sometimes bother me, you know, when they do that. 300 billion stars in our galaxy. And this is what the Bible tells us about God who created them. He, God, determines the number of stars. Have you ever thought of counting the stars in the sky? As a kid, did you ever lay in the front yard on a warm summer night and you and your buddy go, how many stars can you count? And you start counting stars and then you lose count and you can't, you know, where did it start and where did it begin? God knows how many stars there are. He made them. And the Bible tells us that God knows the number of stars in the universe. And it continues in Psalm 147, He, God, gives to all of them their names. Now, if you thought a lot of stars were good, God gives each of them their names. Can you imagine it? My grandparents, maternal grandparents, had 18 kids, and I thought coming up with names for 18 kids would be quite a challenge. God's got trillions of billions of stars out there, and he knows them each by name. God is so big, so capable. He exists without me, but he wants me. The Bible also says that God created the mountains and the oceans and that he holds them in his hands. Earth's oceans cover about 71% of the Earth's surface. The deepest part of the ocean is approximately 36,000 feet deep, and we have only been down to about 35,000 feet below the ocean surface. And God holds the ocean in his hands. He is enough. He is sufficient. It says he holds them in his hand. He doesn't even hold them in both hands like Allstate does. Just one hand, you know? It was in Colorado, we talked about the 14ers, and a lot of people had goals of climbing all the 14ers, and that meant every mountain peak that was above 14,000 feet or above. You would climb that. I never had that goal, okay? I would drive up as far as you can and get out and walk a little bit, see what you can do, you know? That was never my goal. But anyway, Mount Everest exceeds that, it is 29,000 feet above sea level. Can you imagine? Over double a 14er. And there are 1 million known mountains in the world today. And God holds this in his hand. God is sufficient. He's big enough, vast enough, powerful enough. And he doesn't need me. But he wants me. God holds all of this in his hands. Now, there is a guy with very big hands. As a matter of fact, the biggest hands in the NFL is Mo Alie-Cox. He is on the team for the Colts, the Indianapolis Colts. The size of his hand, get this, guys, you need to measure yours when you get home. From his pinky to his thumb is 11.75 inches. That's almost 1 foot. They say he doesn't need two hands to really control the ball. He just needs one hand to wrap around it. But God's hand is far bigger than that, even though that is an amazing fact, especially for a hand my size. God is far bigger, far greater, far grander, and he holds the world in his hand. The first and most important attribute of God necessary for us to grasp is that God is sufficient all by himself. God is all-powerful all by himself. He is capable and doesn't need my assistance. Isn't that amazing? The mystery is that why did this self-sufficient God so freely choose to create someone who was not sufficient, to create human beings who were insufficient and in need of a Savior, in need of a personal relationship with an almighty, powerful God? Isaiah says it like this: "Do not be afraid, for I have ransomed you. I have called you by name. You are mine." God, who knows the names of the billions of stars, the trillions of stars, the billion trillions of stars in all the universe, knows each of us by name. He created us in his image for his purpose. We are God's primarily, firstly, primarily, always will be. We are God's in the beginning, and we are God's at the end of our earthly existence. Do we realize it? That we are not our families? Children, you are not primarily your parents. You don't belong to them. First and primarily, you belong to God. We are not. We don't belong to our ethnicity. We belong to God. That is our first and foremost identity in life. If we see ourselves as a child of God, the ruler of the universe, the creator of all the stars, who holds the world and all that's in it, the future and the past in the palm of his hand, it changes how we respond. It changes our trust and the confidence in the deity that cares about each of us and knows us by name, who follows after us, who knows our ideas and our thoughts, our persuasions, our attitudes. He knows us, and he loved us, and he made a way for us to be ransomed and redeemed through the blood of his Son. This is who you belong to. This is who is your Father. He is your Creator, and he is sufficient to take care of any of your need. He is strong enough and powerful enough to set you on a solid rock when the world is shaking. Because you are first and foremost his. In the book of Genesis, it says, "In the beginning was God." You can put a big pause there. He was God. And he created us. And he has called us by name. And you are his. You belong to God. God who is sufficient. God who is big enough. If you don't feel like you belong to God today, his grace is sufficient to bring you in to the family of God. His grace is sufficient to forgive the past and set you on a magnificent pathway forward, a pathway of adventure, a pathway of challenge, a pathway that will encourage you and strengthen you, and a pathway that will provide a future for you that is phenomenal in eternity. That's what God's grace is. God's grace is also sufficient to sustain you, in the middle of the struggle. Because God is all-powerful. God is all-loving. God is all-creative. God's grace is all-sufficient. God is enough. Wherever you are, God is enough, sufficient. And God has called us to an abundant life. The enemy would come to pull that away and steal it. But Jesus came to give us life and life abundant. He cared about us enough to send the priceless treasure of heaven to come and die on a cross for our sin, that we might be ransomed and we might be called by name by God who created us. God is sufficient. He is all-powerful. And if you want peace this year, in your life, trust in God, who's big enough. If you want to rid anxiety out of your life, cast all your care on a God who's big enough, strong enough, sufficient, and powerful enough to take care of all things. Want to have the right perspective on who you are? Know that you are first and primarily God's. At the end of life, you are His. And what a great place to be.